Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. It's great to be back. We've got a new season for you, Season 2 of Version 2.0. It's going to be a great year this year. We've got a lot of things coming up. Jeremy Gretchen, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi there.
G is off this week, but he'll be back soon enough. Send us your questions, send us your comments. One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter. Our phone number, where you can actually call us, is 503-766-6264. What's in the news?
Well, apparently Google is adding a unique feature to Maps.
So Google and Apple Maps are kind of the two big players now. There's a number of other ones out there, but if you go and look something up, you're most likely, statistically at least, going to do it on Google Maps.
Yeah.
And as such, Google wants to keep adding new features. Like one of them that came out not real recently, but fairly recently, is where it shows the speed limit of the road you're on.
Actually, I like that.
Yeah, it's cool. Most people do. And it seems like it's a feature that this should have always been here. You know, that type of a thing has been the attitude. And this new feature isn't one that I necessarily would have thought of. Maybe others would. But they're adding a function so at night you know how the street lighting is. So what streets are lighted brightly, what ones aren't, that kind of a situation. So if you go for a walk, you know what's safer.
Okay. That's kind of cool.
What do you think of that?
I think it would probably be more useful for a pedestrian than a car driver, but, you know, or even a cyclist it would be useful for.
I think that's what it's targeted to. Google Maps offers pedestrian and cyclist routes and all of that and has for a very long time. So I do think that's what this would be more geared towards than your driving. But I know, Jeremy, you love driving in the dark and the rain, right?
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite thing.
Especially in a big, heavy U-Haul and lots of twisty turns and lots of fog.
I get the impression there might be a little more to that story, which we'll talk about at some time. But the point being, if you were able to map that route and say, I want a well-lit route, it would even benefit you in the car.
It would. LCD car visor makes your drive safer.
Interesting piece of technology. It's something that they're debuting at CES, and I got to try one out, which was a lot of fun.
What exactly is this device look like?
So it's a device that actually replaces the visor in your car. So the thing you flip down to block the sun that's above your window. And the way they're designed is they're universal. At least the one I had just popped right in, and I was able to take the factory one out. And basically what it is it's an LCD screen, and it tracks your eyes, and it tracks where the sun is. So when you're driving your car, it blocks the sun coming into your eyes, but just that part, and keeps the rest of it as an open field of view.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
sounds awesome.
I think this actually, it's an interesting little device. It seems simple enough, but it's something that I think could be an enormous safety feature. And I bet you in a few years, we're going to see them as factory equipment in the cars when you buy one.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Hey, Samsung selfie type new for smartphones. I don't even understand what that is.
Yeah, that topic sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook for me. I had to look it up myself to figure out what they were even talking about here. And this is actually a new take on something that's been on the market for a long time. And it's the ability to set your phone up and have it project essentially a laser setup. The ones that I saw, actually, you didn't see it physically, but some of the older ones you do. And you can type like you're on a keyboard, but you're actually typing on your desktop, but it's able to pick it up like you're typing on the keyboard. So in other words, it allows you to be able to input to the phone like you had a keyboard without the need to physically have the keyboard, if that makes sense.
But you have to have a hard surface for it to project
on. You have to have a hard surface for it to project on. And my opinion on this, and this was the one thing that I didn't like about the older ones. It wasn't in the phone, but again, they had these and they've had them for a long time, is I type about 120 words a minute. And part of my ability to do that comes from the tactile feedback from the physical keyboard. In fact, I like a click keyboard because of that.
I hate that sound, Bill.
I love that
sound when you type it. It just sounds like you're mashing keys, like you're just running your hand back and forth across the keys, not even being anywhere near specific enough.
I've had people not believe I was actually typing. I know what you're talking about. But the point being is, even with one without the click, you still, with a physical keyboard, have that sensation of tapping the keys. Now, with a hard surface like a desktop, you wouldn't. So for me, I don't know. I would have to try it out, see if I could get used to it. But I can see a lot of situations where this is going to be easier than trying to touch type on the screen. So
I still miss the QWERTY keyboard on my phone. So
yeah.
I understand where you're coming from.
Yep. All electric plane makes its first trial flight.
So we've got electric cars. Why not an electric plane? I don't know. What's your feeling about this flying in a new technology like that?
As long as the battery doesn't give out like a quarter of the way through the flight, I think it'd be okay.
Now, is this thing that looks like a little pod and then it's got all these propellers around it, or is that something else?
That is one of the designs, yes. And that is the one that you're talking about. Uber is actually coming up with a scenario here that's like that too, where you'll be flying in your Uber. Oh, you know, what could go wrong there, right? So, but it is interesting to see this technology coming up. And, you know, you've got to start somewhere with all these type of things. The trial flight was successful. It was done in Canada. And they took off, flew, and landed, and it worked just fine. A lot lighter on the environment, doesn't use fuel. There's all of those type of things. And you got to start somewhere. I mean, you know, we had to fly planes initially once. And I know stories like the old days during World War I, you had pilots like the Red Baron that were constantly crashing, but you've got to start somewhere, get the technologies worked out, and be able to move ahead.
What's the anti-Red Baron thing?
I'm not anti-Red Baron at all. I love the history. I think the planes are really cool.
Uh-huh. Anyways, you know, this little vehicle that they showed on the TV, it reminded me of more like a hovercraft.
Yeah.
Or like a, you know, something like from the Jetsons or like Star Wars, like a speeder. It floated.
It's not.
And
it's
because
not
it has propellers.
It has propellers. It's not actually anti-gravity, of course. We're not there yet. But
no, but it's more like a cross between a helicopter and it's less like a plane.
Yeah.
Because a plane, you know, has wings and it glides. So.
And again, the one you're talking about is different from the electric trial flight. But I do know what you're talking about. And it's like a giant drone, kind of.
Yeah. And,
you know,
okay, so it has that feeling. Something different?
Yeah, there's two of them out there. The one you're talking about is one that Uber is testing out. And the idea with the Uber planes is that it will take away from congestion on roads and all that kind of stuff, which it will. The FAA is going to have to give us a system for flying cars. And, you know, it's about 20 years later than we were promised, but it looks like we are actually moving in that direction.
Huh. Okay. 8K television set to come to market this year.
Yeah, do we really need this? I mean,
we can't see the difference between 4 and 8K. It's too high for us to visualize. So I don't understand why that's a good idea.
Now, to argue the other side of that, I haven't made a decision on this yet either. I've been able to see both, and I have an opinion on this, but I didn't think I was going to like 4K over high definition, and I did, and you did. There was a huge difference.
That was something we can actually see, though.
So
8K is beyond our visual range.
Well, it is and it isn't. Now, here's where I think this type of a product is going to be useful, and that's going to be for the really big television. So you have a 40-inch 8K, you're not going to see a difference. Most of us won't. But go ahead.
We're talking Fahrenheit 451 size televisions.
Yeah, okay. It's for example, I believe it's Samsung is debuting a TV that's 214 inches, I think. And
okay, that's just absurd.
something like that, 8K, you would benefit because the higher resolution is going to be capable of a sharper picture at that size, and it would make a difference.
That makes sense.
But again, you're
like a whole wall-sized TV. I don't know.
This is a whole wall-sized TV. And the other thing that I thought was kind of funny about it is you can't even do it with standard height ceilings. You have to have 10-foot ceilings to be able to fit it in, get it on the wall, and have enough overhead to be able to get the wiring and all that. So
okay, that's absurd.
It is definitely... definitely giant because, I mean, even Weird Al was singing about a 100-inch TV, and that was supposed to be a song.
Yeah, that was a 2,000-inch TV, but that was a song, and that was a while ago. And doing the math, that was like 120 feet wide, like 100 and something feet tall. So I don't think that TV is going to make it anytime soon.
Bill Gates didn't think we'd need more than 640K, and look where we've gone with that.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think with technology, it's never a good idea to say never. And, you know, one of the things that I've always wanted is one of those big screens like they have in Las Vegas, at the casinos where you have full high definition or high resolution. And it's this giant, huge thing. And speaking of which, Chaz Wellington, our reporter from down there, is going to be on the floor at CES here in a little bit to talk about the Consumer Electronics Show. And I'm going to want to ask him what the biggest TV is that they have on display there. And is it 8K? Have you missed any of our live episodes? Season 1, any of the things we're doing for Season 2? We have a podcast. Podcast is a way of listening to our show online on demand. They post right after our on-air broadcast. They're available at theanswerportland.com here on the radio station's website or on our show's website at userfriendlynation.com. And what you do is just go to either one of the sites, click on User-Friendly 2.0, and it'll give you a list of the episodes that are available. Select the one you want. You can choose it and play it. Works on your mobile device, works on your desktop. Anywhere you want to listen, you can. We're also available now on a lot of the podcast surfaces like TuneIn, and that's growing every day. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0. This is the section of the show where you get to ask your questions. And we're actually going to be doing a little bit longer one today because we've got so many good questions out there. It's getting harder and harder to choose which ones we get to put on the air. But keep sending them in. What is our first question?
Is it true connected cars can be hacked?
Well, I know this answer is going to be a little bit of a cop-out from some of our listeners, but the reality is anything that's electronic and connected can be hacked. But to dig into this a little bit deeper, some cars are doing this better than others on securing what can and can't be accessed. However, there's been some studies done out there, and there are some scary things that are actually going on here, where they can do things where the bad guys can actually get in over Wi-Fi or satellite like OnStar or some other methodologies, and be able to do things like grab your steering while you're driving. So you're going down the freeway at 65 miles an hour, and all of a sudden the car steers one way or the other.
Or okay, that would really annoy me, you know?
Well, annoy me, yes. Annoy would be a very charitable way of putting it. I mean, yeah. That could be so dangerous.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it comes down to. And it seems like as we're getting into the newer cars, they're getting better at securing these things. But there are definitely some issues out there. And to get into what manufacturers are and aren't doing and who's good and who's not on this would be a lot more than we can cover today on the show. But what I'd like to do is take this as an opportunity to promote our technical blob at theanswerportland.com. It's going to be up in the next couple of weeks here, and we're doing articles where we're going to be diving in depth on a lot of these topics. And one of them that we are doing is looking at the different manufacturers, looking at what's actually happening with the hacking out there, and what you need to do to resolve it or at least protect yourself.
What is a website host?
Good question. I was talking to our listener on this, couldn't convince her to come on the air with us today, but the question itself is still good. And what she's doing is starting a new small business. And in 2020, a small business means a website. A big business means a website. 20 years ago, that meant being in the yellow pages. And for some of our newer listeners that don't know what that is, it was an old form of advertising where you had a book with phone numbers. Today, all of that's online, of course. And to be able to compete, big, small, or otherwise, you have to have a website. And in order to do that, you need a place for the website to essentially live on the internet. So a very brief explanation of this is it's basically another computer where you store your website files, source code, and related information, and that information is accessible 24 hours a day to anybody that would want it online. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of these companies out there that are website hosts that charge you a fee per month, $10, $20, whatever the case may be. That varies substantially, and what they do varies based on what you need. And it's just a service where your files sit. And it gives you the knowledge of knowing that whenever anybody wants to look you up, they're able to get to your stuff, they're able to get to your website, and they maintain it and hopefully make sure that it's up and available 24/7.
Can I use Hulu TV on more than one television?
Good question here. Hulu TV, for anybody that doesn't know, is what's known as an over-the-top television service. It has all of your regular television channels like you would on legacy cable, History Channel, Home and Garden, those type of things. And you use your internet connection instead of a cable TV or satellite line to be able to get to it. And the question here is a good one, and there's actually two different answers to it that I will need to give to cover the whole thing. And the first one is televisions within your own home. Now, this varies from service to service. Hulu TV specifically allows you to have two different televisions in your home simultaneously running, and you can buy an upgrade on the service to take it to 5 screens if you want more for about, I think it's $5 a month or something nominal like that. But the other part of this question is remote access with one account. So in other words, I have a Hulu TV account or I have my Netflix account and that type of thing and want to be able to share that with Jeremy and Gretchen, you guys.
Yay!
And this is where this gets a lot more restrictive, and this does vary a little bit from service to service. Now, Netflix has been talking about what they're doing, calling cracking down on password sharing, where you can view at two different locations simultaneously. As of now, they haven't done that yet, but they are talking about it. And Another over-the-top internet service provider, TV provider that I used to use called PlayStation TV had this very restricted. It was a situation where if you went to a remote location, it would actually take 30 minutes before it would switch, and it would stop playing at one to be able to work at the other. So this does vary from service to service, and the best thing is to look online at the reviews because they will talk about this a little bit.
So are there still TV channels?
Yeah, good question on this. So old-fashioned, you know, a couple of years ago, 6 months ago in the computer world, we had a setup where to get to legacy television channels, you had a channel number. It was channel 12 or channel 6, that kind of a thing. At one time, a long time ago, you turned a dial to get to that. It's digitally tuned now. But the idea here is that this method seems to be going away. It's still used for broadcast television. And a lot of classic legacy cable television services like your Comcast or Charter or whatever still have channel numbers, but the reality of the situation is with those systems, the way that they broadcast, and definitely with over-the-top systems like we were just talking about, Hulu TV, you actually select the network that you want to view, but there isn't necessarily a number associated with it. Now, Comcast still has the numbers because it's the way everybody's used to it being, really. Their method of broadcasting does not require it, and this is true for most television services now. So I think as we move forward, we're going to see this idea more or less disappear, except for maybe broadcast television. But
it is like local stuff,
like your local channels. Exactly.
Okay.
What is the difference between digital and analog television signals?
So to continue our talking about television services, and this is another interesting thing. Analog was the way that television signals were broadcast over the air and over cable. Keep in mind, cable TV is not a new technology. It actually started, I believe, in the early 50s. And in those days, you transmitted only analog. So the difference between analog and digital is the methodology that the signal sent. And to get into that in a lot more depth would be a little bit more than we can get to today. But just to answer the question, it's two different methods. Analog generally takes more bandwidth to be able to transmit the same amount of information that you can over digital. And used in the right way, digital can bring you a sharper signal that doesn't have the snow and that type of things. Now, with advantages on technology, there's always disadvantages. And one of them with digital signals is the fact that they don't seem to go as far as the old analog signals did. So where you could have picked up a broadcast television station in some places on analog, you won't get it on digital. The other thing of it is the digital signal degrades faster. So where you would get snow on analog but still be able to see something, digital just simply won't work. So there's advantages and disadvantages to both, but that's mainly the same thing, this thing that you're going to see that's a difference. The other thing on this is the tuner. Something that's designed for analog will not pick up digital signals and vice versa. And for a while, they were giving away free devices to be able to convert an analog TV over to digital. They're still available to be bought online. But now most newer equipment that you would buy has digital built in, and it's just the way that it works.
What are cloud-based DVRs?
So DVR is a acronym for digital video recorder. This is a device that's been used for a long time for being able to record television programs. Manufacturer of these was TiVo for many years. They're actually still out there. And it was a box that went on your television, kind of like an older thing, a VCR, and recorded. Now these are moving to the cloud. So a cloud-based DVR is that functionality, but it uses the internet to record, which means it's somewhat limitless. The other nice feature that you can get from this is the ability to watch your recorded shows when you're on the go. So if you're at the airport with your tablet, you can actually log into your DVR as long as the service allows it and be able to look at your recordings just like you were in your living room, put your headset on, and not have that big long wait at the airport. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Last season, we got to talking a lot about The Mandalorian, and now that we've seen the end of it, Jeremy and Gretchen, do you still like the series?
Absolutely.
Totally.
So there's been a lot of these kind of theories going on online, and one of them is an interesting article that CNET posted on what actually is the child or baby Yoda, as we've all come to know him. And I thought we should talk about that a little bit and kind of see what their theories are and what we think is going on here. Now, the first one that they present here is Baby Yoda is the illicit child of Yoda and Yaddle. Let's start with Gretchen. Who is Yaddle?
Okay, Yaddle is a female of the same species as Yoda. And just so you know, they haven't decided the name of Yoda's species or race or whatever you want to call it. So that's why they call the baby, Baby Yoda.
Right.
Yaddle was on,
she was in The Phantom Menace.
And in a bunch of comic
books. And the comic books. And I think she might have made it to the Clone Wars, but I don't remember if I actually saw her in that. But depending on which timeline version you're looking at, she's either dead or removed herself from the council.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they would have both had to have violated their oaths to the Jedi to conceive the child, which I don't think either one is going to do.
Now, this character, she would still be considered a part of the canon if she was in the movie, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that's an interesting theory. Now, the next one they have up here is Baby Yoda is actually a fungus. What do you think about that?
A highly sentient plant of some sort, no, that doesn't make any sense.
I'm not even going to make a comment because that's just like,
I'm not even sure where that would come from. That is honestly not something I would have thought of in any capacity here.
Or that along with the one where they're saying that the Baby Yoda is a Horcrux.
Right. Yeah. No, that's another one. Okay. So that actually is another one they presented to us here. And that would be a mixing of universes because that's Harry Potter, right? So
yes, and they don't do that.
So are you sure that isn't the case here? Maybe there was a blending of universes.
It would be fan fiction, and no, they don't do that.
Yeah,
we'll have to reach out to the Harry Potter fans on that one. All right, how about this one, which actually sounds a little bit more pragmatic? Baby Yoda is a merchandising ploy.
Okay, now here's the thing, maybe, but. If they were going to merchandise Baby Yoda, it would have leaked at the same time as the photos of the action figures.
Right, right. Okay, so there's an action figure for Baby Yoda?
There is, but it won't be available until next year.
Okay. Until next year.
This year. So, okay. I mean, it's going to be a while.
But it is 2020, right? It's like the middle of the year.
Yeah, it's 2020, but they've showed pictures for a couple months and talked about it, and you know, they don't even have all the plush toys done, and those are quicker to make.
Yeah, I don't think they had any idea that people would love this character so much.
No, and if they were going to merchandise the heck out of it, it would have been leaked, and it would have been a total spoiler for what was going on. Yeah. So,
now, I will tell you one thing, and I have heard this from a lot of our listeners, and I kind of feel the same way, that in many ways, with all of the controversy that's been going on with the movies, this is something that most of the Star Wars fans seem to really like. I know I do.
Yes.
It seems like a great character, and it's a great ongoing storyline. It isn't like it holds things up. There's a lot you can do with that character. And my understanding is he's actually a puppet.
Yes.
Yeah. Originally, they were thinking that they might have to do CGI because they weren't sure if they could do the puppet well enough. And while they were filming with Werner Herzog, who is the client, they filmed the scene with the puppet in place, and then they went to take it out, and he said, "No, that's the coward's way. You're going to leave the puppet in." And so, I think that is just outstanding.
That was perfect. I'm glad he said that because they've done a great job on the puppet. Yeah. He's adorable,
and you know it absolutely works. I mean, it looks good. It feels real. It has that kind of emotional connection, and you know.
And you know the actors can pick him up, and there's a connection.
It actually interacts. Yeah,
it's not a make believe thing. They can actually see the little puppet and grab a hold of him.
So, how about Baby Yoda is actually Emperor Palpatine? What do you think of that?
Somebody's been smoking something.
Yes. I think that's more of that what you call fan fiction,
right?
Yeah. You know, I'm pretty sure he died. It's been reported that George Lucas says he died. In Return of the Jedi, so I'm not sure where they got the guy to come back, but, you know, hey, whatever floats your canonical boat, I guess.
The thing is, though, I love the name Palpa Yoda.
No.
I could just deal with that.
Yoda-teen.
Yoda-teen. And you know what? You know, there's been lots of goofy names passed around, but I think the name's going to have to start with a Y, whatever it is.
Yeah, they might have actually changed that, and I think we're going to see next season what that actually is. Well, this is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. And with no further ado, we're going to go to Chaz, who is recording live on the floor of CES. Chaz, welcome to the show.
Yes, Bill. First and foremost, Happy New Year 2020. I am here at the Consumer Electronics Show, CES 2020, in the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. CES 2020 now has over 4,500 exhibiting companies. Unbelievably, 160 countries are present, and there's over 175,000 attendees. What a huge event. I'm starting out the day here in the audiovisual categories, and I'm looking at the companies, Roland, LG, Royal, and Magnavox. You can hear Roland in the background, the music. And, you know, from tech startups to massive companies, it's all here. CES 2020 is going to be amazing, as it has been in the past. And so I'm going to be moving on to some other companies. But the categories I'm going to be moving on to look at now are, of course, the self-driving vehicles, the robotics, but I'm definitely excited about the virtual reality and the augmented reality. But I'm going to make sure that I check out cloud services and computer hardware, of course. But anyway, great time here at CES 2020. Back to you, Bill.
And Chaz, what do you have for us next?
Yes, Bill. Hey, we're back here at CES 2020. I made one of the stops I wanted to tell you about, and it's just an amazing product. It's similar to the Sony The Wall, but this company is Konica, and the TV is an Afeya Smart Wall 8K Micro LED. Now, mind you, you can get this TV in two sizes, 118-inch, which is 4K. You can also get the 236-inch 8K TV. Now, you know, budget-wise, I'd probably go for the 4K. But yeah, the 118-inch is approximately $240,000. The 236-inch 8K TV is a whopping $1.2 million. That is their price point for these products. But anyway, I want to tell you a little bit about the product. It's just an amazing screen. It's huge. It has 100 million RGB LED chips transferred with high speed and high precision. It has smart encryption and, you know, all the bells and whistles you would expect. But just looking at this TV, I don't know how we would get it in a house. But hey, Bill, we got to find a way to get it in our office, right? All right. But anyway, just moving on to other products. Back to you, Bill.
So, Chaz, next I hear we've got somebody who is actually making some money on YouTube. What have you got?
Yes, Bill, we're back here at CES 2020. We're wrapping it up. I had a lot of great time, a lot of great events, and a lot of great products. I'm going to wrap it up with a special guest, Sean Cannell. He is Think Media founder and a YouTube expert. And I'll start off with asking Sean to give a little bit of his background, what you liked about CES, and what you're doing in the future with your company and your YouTube channels.
Yeah, so my name's Sean Cano. I run the company Think Media, and I actually just started shooting videos in my bedroom back in 2010. Got into video for my local church in 2003, and today we run a multiple seven-figure media company with a team of about 15 of us. So we've grown, and one of the things I like about CES is I've been coming here for 7 years. I used to come when I was the audio-video marketing director of a church to just look for cameras that we would do for video production for our, we had a TV show at the time for the church, as well as online media and an online campus. And so I've been a part of CES now for years. I've loved it. But then as I started a tech channel, really realizing I could help people with video tips as well as camera gear reviews and whatnot, I started to come to CES to create content. And from years ago, being just a truly one-man band, I was the chef, cook, and bottle washer with a monopod, camera, microphone, just filming myself, going home and editing at night, getting up early and doing it the next day, trying to release as many videos as possible. We've kind of scaled to having a small team that will come to CES, and it depends on what products are released each year, but just last year we did 29 videos from CES, and we like to cover shows like CES and NAB to be on the cutting edge of tech and to help our community with our value proposition of bringing people the best tips and tools for building their influence with online video.
Nice. What do you see for the future of Think Media?
Future of Think Media right now is our mission to help 10,000 people create a full-time living doing what they love while making a difference in the world with online video. What that means for us is we are an education company, and we help people overcome the tools side. Hey, what camera do I need? How do I live stream? And then not only what tech do I need, but how do I use it? So we do the tools and the tutorials on the channel. But then the other side is the tips. In fact, we just launched a second YouTube channel and a new podcast called Think Marketing. And that's, I believe, even more important. That's the side of how do the YouTube algorithms work? What other social media platforms are there opportunities on, like LinkedIn right now? Probably the best organic reach online, and it's a content publishing platform right now, so you can upload video content there. And so myself and my team, we're just committed to serving those two verticals, helping people with educational content around the tech side, and then around the marketing side. And as far as our future, we're pretty dialed in into our kind of product services and offerings. We have an annual live event that meets in Las Vegas. We have smaller masterminds that we do. We have digital courses. And then we have a ton of free content. So we're here to serve people really at anywhere they are on their online journey, from just starting out and trying to figure out the basics and the 101 of this stuff, or if they're scaling and they're further along and they're trying to figure out how to go from 100,000 subscribers to a million, or how to scale their business from six figures to seven, whatever it is, we've kind of been through those hoops. I've been going brick by brick, season by season, year by year myself. I have a lot of talented people that have also built some pretty incredible businesses and been in unique paths themselves. And we brought together this conglomerate, if you will, called Think Media, to just serve people truly with education so that they are prepared to dominate business, digital marketing, video marketing in 2020 and beyond.
That is commendable. You do absolutely great work. So I hope you have a great time at CES the rest of the time here, and we look forward to seeing you next year.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, thanks, Sean.
Jez, thank you so much. It was great to have you this year, and it was good to get some coverage from the show. CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, will be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Great show this week, guys.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I know we just talked about it, but I'm getting the distinct impression you are pretty happy with the Mandalorian series.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Beautifully done. And I really like the writing. The way it's done is it just keeps pulling you in, and you want to ask more questions. And you want to see more. And that, know, I think that's the best kind of entertainment.
I think it is, too. I think they've personally, it's a really nice job. That's kind of that space cowboys almost thing again that Star Wars, the original movies, was so known for and people loved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's held I just love it. It's entertaining and it's held my interest. That's the word I was going for. And it's, you know, it's been a really good thing. And I have permission, special permission to leak that we looks like we're going to get a Rebels 2 cartoon. It's not that exact universe, but there is something in the works. So we may not have to wait until September to have another Star Wars series.
That would be awesome. I really loved the first series. It was written really well.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and the actors did a good job, too. Oh, yeah. So did the artists.
All the way, you know, it takes all that. I have learned recently, it's 90% your crew, writers, everything, 10% the talent. I'm sure some people will yell at me for that, but it is absolutely true. It's the people that back you up that make this good or not good. And the reality of the situation is watching Mandalorian and just knowing how much work has gone into that, and even things like the Rebel cartoon, it's just amazing to me that the talent, the skill, and how many people it takes to bring together to put something like that on that's successful and that people really enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So coming up here, we're going to be talking about a lot of this, a lot more. And getting some information this season that might be a little bit ahead of schedule on some others. We're also going to be covering conventions. We've got Wizard World coming up here in Portland. And Wizard World is a national Comic Con that's all over the place. And we've been to a number of them down in Sacramento, San Jose, here in Portland, where we record. We're going to be covering it again this year. And it's looking to be a lot of fun. And Jeremy Gretchen, are you guys looking forward to it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I'm hoping it's going to be a little more exciting than last year.
Well, last year we got snowed out.
Rainstorm and snowstorms, and it was bad.
It was, they did an excellent job last year considering what they had to work with, because so many of the exhibitors couldn't show up. We were snowed in. I mean, it took you guys 3 days to get back.
Yeah. And I recall, their main host guy, was that Cato Kaelin? Yeah. He was trying so hard to get enthusiasm going and being positive, and he didn't have a big enough crowd. So,
No, it was all the way around. I know when we got there, my feet were wet. I was not in a good mood. It was just just difficult. But the show was good. And this year, hopefully the weather will be better. I understand you guys are flying in this year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Well, we can still get stuck for 3 days if they can't take the plane.
Yeah, but it'll be easier to be stuck like that and waiting for a flight than it is to be stuck on Interstate 5, as it was. But anyway, this is User-Friendly 2.0. Keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2020 User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.